is Tuesday, November 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the Kremlin condemns opposition to the Russian candidate nominated to head Interpol. We get reaction.
Russia has put a lot of lobbying effort into other members to try to have their member elected.
The chairman of Nissan is under arrest for alleged financial misconduct, and the new film Widows receives rave reviews. It's all ahead. The Kremlin says opposition to a Russian candidate to lead the global police group Interpol amounts to election interference. The election for a new leader is set for Wednesday at the end of Interpol's annual conference in Dubai. Interpol member countries will vote to replace Meng Hongwei, who disappeared in his native China in September. China later told Interpol that Meng had quit after being charged with accepting bribes. Reporter Henry Ridgewell in London tells me about the ongoing controversy.
Well, it's ahead of an election that will be held tomorrow at the Interpol General Assembly being held in Dubai to choose its new president. That election being forced by the detention of the former Chinese president in Beijing. There's only two candidates that have been put forward, a Korean candidate and the Russian candidate put forward by the Kremlin, Alexander Prokopchuk. He was the head of Russia's National Bureau of Interpol. And he stands accused by critics of the Kremlin of being the chief architect of Russia's abuse, as they call it, of Interpol's arrest warrant system. This system is known as red notices, and it allows police forces around the world to try to trace, track down, and have suspects arrested. And as I say, Kremlin critics say that they've been using that to pursue and harass political opponents around the world. Today in London, some of those opponents, including the exiled Russian businessman Mikhail Khodorkovsky and the British-US financier Bill Browder, held a press conference where they outlined the red notices, the arrest warrants that have been leveled against them, and said this would be a huge abuse of the system. This would be a scandal if the Russian candidate did indeed win the election as president, and it would be another tool by which Russian President Vladimir Putin would pursue his political enemies.
Is there any indication yet that Prokopchuk is the leading candidate, or are there other people as well that are, you know, very concerned about his nomination?
It appears at this moment he is the favorite, although, of course, it's impossible to know. The vote is a simple two-thirds majority among the 180 or so members of Interpol, and it requires a two-thirds majority. Each country's vote has the same weight, so we won't know for sure until tomorrow, although many people suspect that the Russian candidate will be the lead figure, simply because Russia has put a lot of lobbying effort into other members to try to have their member elected. The press conference today in London, I mentioned, was just with two of those Kremlin critics. But of course, there are many countries, many governments around the world who have voiced concern over this, not least a group, a bipartisan group of U.S. senators who have written to Interpol to outline their fears about the election of a Russian. They said that putting this man in charge as president of Interpol would be akin to putting a fox in charge of a hen house. In the European Union, they're debating enacting what's known as Magnitsky legislation, whereby human rights abusers, especially in Russia, can have their assets frozen and have visas suspended. And also Lithuania has said that it may quit Interpol if the Russian candidate is elected, and Ukraine has made a similar threat as well. So the tension and the threats are building up ahead of this vote Wednesday in Dubai.
And also, if Prokopchuk took office immediately after the sort of the disappearance of Meng Hongwei in China, that would follow its own very mysterious situation.
It would indeed, and I think the critics of this system, of this process, are keen to point out that it's Interpol's reputation on the line here as well, really. And some have said that Western countries, or democracies rather, that respect the rule of law may even have to set up a new system of police coordination, cooperation around the world if Interpol goes down this line. So the future of Interpol very much at stake here. And if countries do start to withdraw from the organization, of course, that undermines Interpol itself. It undermines its raison d'etre and the way it operates. And so there are some big questions for them to answer. I did speak to Interpol today, who were keen to point out this is a democratic process, and they also say that the role of president isn't an executive one, which involves the day-to-day running of the organization. It's more a strategic role. So perhaps there's some dispute over whether a Russian president of Interpol would be able to pursue these red notices. But nevertheless, having a Russian in such a prominent role in an organization that stands accused of being abused by the Kremlin is, of course, causing a lot of controversy.
Henry Ridgewell reporting from London. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. A federal judge blocks a Trump administration order limiting asylum. A UN envoy prepares for peace talks in Yemen, follow after fighting erupts in a Yemeni port. A deadly blast strikes a religious gathering in Kabul, Afghanistan. And Ivanka Trump often conducted U.S. business on private email last year, according to a watchdog group. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
In a minute.
NASA has bid a final goodnight to the Kepler spacecraft. Over its 9-year mission, Kepler discovered over 2,600 confirmed exoplanets. The space agency officially retired the mission at the end of October when the planet-hunting space telescope ran out of fuel. But mission controllers recently sent it a final set of commands that finalized its retirement, including disconnecting its communication with Earth and disabling its safety modes to prevent it from unintentionally turning systems back on. NASA says Kepler is currently drifting in a safe solar orbit some 151 million kilometers from Earth. NASA's TESS, or Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, launched in April 2018, will take over the space agency's search for planets beyond our solar system. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Lithuania says Russia's Uber could be used for spying. We'll have a report. Nissan's stock plummeted after revelations of preparations underway to oust longtime Nissan chairman Carlos Ghosn this week, following his arrest in Japan on allegations of financial misconduct. Nissan executive Greg Kelly has also been implicated. Company CEO Hirata Sakawa said an investigation uncovered years of underreporting compensation and misuse of corporate funds. He acknowledged part of the problem was allowing one person to have so much authority. As for the alliance with Mitsubishi and Renault, Sakawa said while the arrest will have an impact, this is about correcting serious misconduct and is not a matter that should harm the partnership. Japanese officials vowed to work with France, a key stakeholder in Renault, to protect the alliance. This is quite a turnaround for the 64-year-old Brazilian-born executive who had been revered in Japan for his role in snatching Nissan from the brink of bankruptcy and leading it for two decades. Eric Harwit is a professor in Asian studies at the Hawaii-based East-West Institute and follows the Asian automotive market. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty this is a remarkable turn of events for a man who had at one time been revered as Mr. Fix-It.
Especially in Japan, he's been seen as an amazing figure, a foreigner who could turn around a company 20 years ago that was suffering, a Nissan. And it's all the more amazing because he's not Japanese. So it's a very rare foreigner who's been able to succeed in the Japanese business world, and especially with the kind of advances he made at Nissan to save the company.
Is this all about accountability? And there apparently is a move in Japan for corporate responsibility.
That's kind of the buzzword these days in Japan, not just within the country, but even in their overseas ventures in China and other countries around the world. I think that part of the problem for Gon himself was the jealousy from some of the workers within Japan. Some of, apparently, many Japanese, I think, are upset that his salary was so much higher than that of other Japanese CEOs. For example, the chairman of Toyota, a company more or less the same size as Nissan and with similar kind of sales, his salary was only a little bit more than $1 million, whereas Gon's salary, we're not quite clear exactly what his total compensation was, but it was probably at least 10 or 20 times that. As you say, corporate responsibility and the respect for at least what the Japanese view is an amount of salary that's amenable to his position, that he really overstepped the bounds with the kind of money that he was accepting in his salary.
What happens to the alliance between Renault and Nissan?
That'll continue, I think. That's really been one of the rare success stories between different auto ventures of different countries. So we saw, for example, in previous year, Daimler-Chrysler, the German-American venture, fell apart after a few years. But it's really been quite remarkable that the Japanese and the French companies have been able to work together. They have overlapping ownership between the companies. The alliance in total is producing more vehicles than Toyota, than General Motors, than Volkswagen, than the largest single companies in the world. So I would be surprised if the alliance falls apart just because the CEO of a major part of it is ousted.
Eric Harwit of the East-West Institute in Hawaii. French President Emmanuel Macron said his government would be extremely vigilant regarding the stability of the alliance. In the Baltic country of Lithuania, there's growing debate over a Russian-owned taxi ride-sharing service that Lithuanian government officials warn could be spying on users through their smartphones. So could an app be the latest tool in Kremlin hybrid tactics, or is fear of all things Russian gone too far? From Vilnius, Charles Maines reports.
Gunaris Riobokas says driving his taxi along the streets of Vilnius every day has made him Lithuania's unofficial pollster of public opinion.
I here have a lot of customers, a lot of stories, a lot of something happened every day. You know, I knew more than anybody, you know.
That includes what Lithuanians look for when they look for a ride.
They want a ride cheap, that's all. It's everything against price.
The idea is at the heart of competition among a crowded field of taxi rideshare services that include the U.S.-based Uber, Lithuania's own Taxify, and Russia's Yandex Taxi. Already dominant in Russia, Yandex launched its taxi-sharing app in the Baltic countries in the summer of 2018 to a receptive market. But growing success has also caught the eye of Lithuania's Ministry of Defense, which has raised concerns about illicit data gathering through the app's access to user contacts, microphone, and camera.
Our National Cybersecurity Center did the first examination on where exactly data is being sent. And what we found out, that the data was sent to Russia.
Lithuania says that may violate European Union law. It since banned the use of the app by government officials and issued warnings to the public pending an investigation. Back in Moscow, Yandex Taxi calls the charges unfounded. Access to smartphone function simply improves service, they say, and all user information is stored within EU data centers.
If someone has some suspicions, especially the Baltic state government's officials, we are open, we are ready to do all the necessary checks, let them come, and we are ready for discussion.
The charges have dragged the app into a wider Russia-West standoff over issues that include Ukraine and alleged election interference. So is Yandex Taxi the latest tool in Kremlin hybrid tactics, or just a company maligned for simply being Russian? On the streets of the capital Vilnius, views break down along cultural lines, mindful of Lithuania's past under Russian-Soviet rule.
what kind of secret information could I have? It's because Yandex is Russian that they're finding fault with it.
It's Russophobia. There's nothing else to say. It's just politics.
I'm not going to use it.
And the reason why?
Because I think that belongs to Russia.
Well, I think there is still some stigma between Lithuania and Russia.
But in an era when data protection from all tech companies, Western included, are under the microscope, some Lithuanians are opting out in other ways.
I can go on foot, I'm young, so I don't need taxi.
Walking, if only there was an app for that. Charles Maines for VOA News, Vilnius, Lithuania.
Most healthy children between the ages of 4 and 10 grow about 5 centimeters a year. So one family knew something was wrong when their son fit into the same clothes season after season. VOA's Carol Pearson reports doctors were able to get him growing once again after testing for a growth hormone.
All in on three! One, two, three, all in!
11-year-old Spencer Bayman is passionate about baseball.
My goal is to play college baseball.
There was only one problem. Spencer was the shortest player on his team.
I want to be as tall as these kids.
Go, Spencer!
Come on, Spencer!
Gradually, Spencer's parents suspected something was wrong.
It really set in one year coming out of winter into spring when he got out his cleats for spring baseball and he put them on, they fit. And they never should have fit. Those were from the spring prior.
Spencer's parents set up an appointment with Dr. Bert Bachrach, the chief of pediatric endocrinology at University of Missouri Healthcare. After careful testing, Dr. Bachrach determined a growth hormone deficiency was causing Spencer's growth failure.
Growth hormone just doesn't affect your growth. It affects your muscle mass and fat distribution. So that affects your cholesterol. That affects your overall, it also affects your overall sense of well-being.
Growth hormone insufficiency is a disorder involving the pituitary gland, which is a small, pea-sized gland located at the base of the brain. It is this gland that produces human growth hormone, among others.
Ready?
Yeah.
Since Spencer started getting a daily hormone injection 2 years ago, he has grown about 15 centimeters. Still, he has a reminder written in each of his baseball caps.
It says HDMH, which means height doesn't measure heart.
And heart is something Spencer has plenty of. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is International Edition.
You girls happy to split your cut?
Split our cut? It's equal or nothing.
You vouch for her?
I don't require a vouch.
You really need another gun?
I got my own. You need to watch how you talk to me.
If you're in, we need to get you started right away.
Well, it didn't win at the weekend box office, but the movie Widows did come in fourth place and is getting rave reviews. International Edition's Lori London talks about the film with Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard.
I did, and it's funny because they screened the movie when I was seeing another film at the same time. So sometimes, you know, they screen two movies in one night. I have to choose. But I wanted to go on my own to see this because it has the cast, dream cast, and also the director, Steve McQueen, is just absolutely phenomenal. 12 Years a Slave, he did. And I was just like, I got to see this movie. And it's a heist movie. You know, a police shootout leaves four thieves dead after an explosive armed robbery attempt in Chicago, and they're widows. have nothing in common except a debt left behind by their spouses. And all their spouses were a gang. They were criminals. But a lot of their, some of the wives knew what they did and some didn't. Like Viola Davis, she ran a long marriage without knowing what her husband did, or maybe she did know, but she never said anything. So now they have to find out their future, right? So they join forces and they pull off a heist that her husband was planning. But it's much more than a heist movie. Each one of these women have a different background. They have different problems, different struggles. So it is a very empowering movie to see how the women have to come, you know, they have to face their future like this. And it's so well done. It's very Hitchcock, the dialogue. And then you also have Brian Tree Henry, who's the gangster trying to get his money back from Viola Davis. He's trying to get a better life. He's trying to become an alderman. He's running for office. But also Colin Farrell is also running for it, and his dad has been the alderman for decades, played by Robert Duvall. So you have a political thriller. You have a heist movie going on. You have a drama, you know, with the women trying to figure out picking up their lives after their husbands all died brutally in a police ambush. And some of the wives have children. Some of them are totally clueless what their husbands did. They were beaten by some of them. This movie has so many layers. It's so complex. It's so satisfying. I couldn't believe how good it was. And performances, I can't even choose my favorite performance because this movie is star-studded and the screenplay sings. You know, I've been waiting to see that one movie where it just hits me in the head and I come out going, this is the movie to beat. And in my opinion, this is the movie to beat for me to be Best Picture for the year.
Wow, that's quite an endorsement. I don't hear you say that often. I guess I'm going to have to run out and see it. And we do have a lighter movie as well, an animated film, Ralph Breaks the Internet. How did he do that? Tell us about it.
Well, you know, this is a sequel to Wreck-It Ralph, Disney's huge hit with John C. Reilly and Sarah Silverman doing the voices. Video Bad Game Ralph and his fellow misfit Vanellope must risk everything by traveling to the World Wide Web in search of a replacement part to save Penelope's video game, Sugar Rush. So they're way over their heads. So they rely on the citizens of the Internet, the Netsians, to help navigate their way, including, you know, all your favorite social media sites from Facebook to YouTube to... It's just so funny to see how clickbait is used in the movie and all these great characters come about. So you see these 80s video game characters in the modern internet, you know, seeing these incredible games, and also the humor is really funny. Great special effects, great animation. This is a great Disney holiday treat, and again, I loved it. I had the best time.
Jeffrey K. Howard, he was speaking with International Edition's Lori London. Find Jeffrey K. Howard's full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com. Well, that's our show for today. Please visit our website at VOAnews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
If you doubt the speed at which the world is changing, just take a look at the digital media. In the last 20 years, the introduction of mobile and internet technology has spawned breathtaking advances in the sharing of information and commerce. Today, an estimated 1/4 of the Earth's population uses the services of the internet. 2/3 of us now own a mobile phone. But these advances into the digital age have been met with problems. Problems like state censorship, hackers, and identity theft, to name just a few. The Voice of America wants to know how the digital world has transformed your life. Or have they? We'd like you to tell us your story by writing or sending videos to our website, Twitter, or Facebook page. Find out more by visiting us at our webpage at voanews.com and then click on Digital Frontier. Tell your story and share it with the world through VOA's Digital Frontier.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Good evening.